The following broadcast has been approved for Elite Hornets fans.
What a block by Cody Zeller.
Walker down the lane, drive, shoots, scores! Game over!
Bringing back the buzz is only the beginning.
We will not go quietly into the night.
It's Hornets talk for the hardcore fan. It's Hive Talk Live.
Welcome in, Hornets fans. You are listening to Hive Talk Live on atthehive.com. It's Hornets Talk for the hardcore fan, and we are live in the Gittimer.com studios in beautiful Uptown Charlotte. I'm Doug Branson, joined in studio by David Walker. David, how are you?
I'm great, Doug. Good to be back, and we've got playoff basketball to discuss.
Hopefully better playoff basketball ahead to discuss. Joining us in studio as well, the host of the reinitiated, reinvigorated, really great podcast, the Mic Check Podcast, Nada Edwards. Nada, welcome back, friend.
Boys, it's been a while. I haven't seen you guys in forever. Y'all go and get TV gigs and everything else like that, and then you know what? Y'all just forgot about me, it felt like. I didn't feel loved.
Guys, I put on base makeup. I had like an ingrown, this is way too much information, but I had ingrown hair and I put concealer on it. This is what TV is doing to me. It's making me way too concerned about my appearance.
Yes, it is, but you know what? It's justified. I can't necessarily blame you on that one.
Coming up, guys, in moments, we head out to Miami and talk to Jonathan Jones with the Charlotte Observer, who's been busy covering team practice as the Hornets get set to take vengeance on the Miami Heat after getting trounced in Game 1. Plus, our friend Nada, he's here, he's in studio, and he has his thoughts on fan reactions to the loss, both on Twitter and on the air. He has his finger on the pulse of the Charlotte Hornet fan kingdom. And also Nick Denning, at the Hive writer, he's back with what's happening around the NBA playoffs. But first, a few words. Subscribe to us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app and get live shows and our new daily Hive O'Clock alarms downloaded to your mobile device of choice. If you're listening live, we've got a poll up right now on atthehive.com on the show post. What is your panic meter set to after that Game 1 loss? Let us know on the post over on atthehive.com. It's important that you vote in that poll because we want your voice to be heard, and we want to talk about it when we get to Nada's segment later on. And because you can take Game 1, but you'll never take our spirit, let's swarm Charlotte. Nada, it's been a while since we talked to you, so before we get to our friend Jonathan Jones, just real quick thoughts on that Game 1 loss.
It's an aberration. I need everybody to calm down. I need everybody to go get your favorite iced coffee, go get your favorite sarsaparilla, something along the lines of that. Can we relax? Realize it was an aberration. Luol Deng is not going to go for 31 points in every playoff game this year, because if he does, then you know what? Fine.
That's a wrap.
It wasn't our year.
Right.
But we need to stop infighting. There's certain things to take from this game. The first of which is they lost this game in the first quarter. As long as you realize that once the first quarter was over and the way that they were shell-shocked from essentially the speed of the playoffs, once you realize all that, then you're fine. And as far as I'm concerned, that was an aberration. You should see a better game two no matter what going forward.
All right, that's a preview of Nada's take coming up. Want to get out to the Hive Talk Live hotline where Jonathan Jones is standing by live from sunny Miami, Florida. He's covering the series for the Charlotte Observer. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Jonathan, I'm a little jealous. I just took a work trip down to Naples, Florida, and had just enough time to get 2 feet on the sand. I looked left, I looked right, and then I had to go right back to work. Hopefully, you've enjoyed more of Florida than I had a chance to.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest with you. Miami's not ever really been my town, but when you have 72 hours between games, if you don't make it out to the beach, I don't really know what you're doing. So I was able to do that today. It's been good.
You fit in more out there anyway, don't you, JJ?
Why would you say why would you say that?
Because if you've ever hung out with JJ, he's got those deep, deep cut V-necks, and I make fun of him for this all the time. So this is nothing new to him. But he fits in down there with those deep, V-neck t-shirts that I know he's wearing right now, especially because so I know he fits in perfectly right now.
Very true. Very true. Not well done.
Well, Jonathan, you're in V-neck or not, you're enjoying it. The Hornets haven't enjoyed it so far. How is the mood around Hornets practice today and yesterday, both from the player side and Coach Clifford?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're still upbeat. And look, Clifford has really beaten into them, and they certainly do believe it. And to a measure, it's true. Whether they lost by one or lost by 30, the series is 1-0. And there's nothing really you can do about that. So I get it. That, and I see both sides, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is that, look, and you lose by 31 in the playoffs, especially in the opener, that has to be somewhat demoralizing. But on the other side of that token, I think a lot of people say, look, it's just 1-0. And as Niall was saying earlier, as we've all said, it's an aberration. Now, does that mean that I think the Hornets are going to win four straight? No, I don't. And I don't know if they're even going to win tomorrow night. But I long expected this game to be played in the mid-90s. I'm talking 95-93. It would be a very normal final score for the rest of the series. Whichever way it goes, it goes. But no one expected the Heat to score 123. And if either one of these teams for the rest of this series get over 110, I would be surprised.
JJ, one thing. I know that Clifford has already talked about not changing up the lineups, but did he say expect more, I don't know, Troy Daniels, maybe a little bit more Jeremy Lamb?
No, you know, that didn't really come up. I think there's been so much focus on how Hassan White dominated and how Cody or Al and what they need to do right there. You know, I think for a lot of fans and a lot of observers who may be watching this and they say, oh, well, clearly what the Hornets need to do is they need to put Al Jefferson in there, and then Hassan Whiteside is going to have more trouble with him. Well, Whiteside played pretty well against both of them, number one, on the offensive side. And then on the defensive side, Eric Spoelstra, as soon as Al Jefferson went in there to match up against Whiteside, after about two possessions, Amari Stoudemire was heading over to the scores table to check in. So they do have an antidote for that, for the Hornets' antidote. So I don't think it's as simple as just, oh, just put an L and play him more against Hassan. No, it's not that simple, because then they'll play Amari a little bit more, and those two guys match up a lot better with one another.
So it doesn't sound like this team's panicking, Jonathan. I mean, Clifford's a very even-keeled coach anyway, and I think hopefully that's trickled down to this team. But even after the game, you know, they were certainly down, but it doesn't feel like they were distraught. Would you say that's still the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kemba's still very upbeat. And you know, he said something today that, you know, these players are wired so differently. And he thought that they were still in the game, that they were going to make a run up until midway through the fourth quarter. And that's when he was like, all right, we need to pack this in, guys. Like, it's not going to happen. You know, I heard you guys earlier say after the first quarter, you know, it was kind of over. You know, I thought if they could get to halftime and it'd be a 10-point game.
Yep.
That, you know, after, and then at the end of the third quarter, it's a 7-point game, and then whatever happens in the fourth happens. But as soon as it was not a 10-point game at halftime, and then they came out as cold as they did in the third quarter, that's when I knew the game was definitely over. I could go ahead and start writing my copy for deadline.
Jonathan Jones, Charlotte Observer, joining us live from Miami, site of game two on Wednesday night. Jonathan, is there anything that the Hornets players or Coach Clifford pointed to specifically that seemed to put a wrench into their defensive plans against Miami?
Yeah, so it's interesting and a little complicated, but the Miami's pick and roll game is really good. So number one, Dragic can obviously, he can shoot the ball off the pick and roll. He didn't do that all that often, and he didn't really do that well against the Heat. But what we saw and what we all know about is Hassan Whiteside has five dunks, most of those coming off of the pick and rolls, and really bad rotations. Well, what you have is you have Lual Deng doing a Magetti cut off of the weak side of the pick and roll. And so the Hornets are able to stop that sometimes, but they have to be cognizant of that. And so the Heat can do three things off their pick and roll. And number one is obviously Dragic, he can shoot the ball, they can lob it to Whiteside as they did many times, or they can find that cutter like a Lual Deng, like he's been so good at his entire career. Well, Dragic, I think, was 2 of 8, maybe, shooting off the pick and roll. They were able to stop Deng cutting, though they didn't stop him doing anything else, but they got 2 out of 3, obviously, Whiteside. their defensive rotations were off the entire game. And so it's, to them, they're saying, hey, we can fix this. We know what's wrong. The spacing in the back is a little different because of how Spoelstra likes to play perimeter and post guys along the baseline at very random times, especially in their half-court set. So they know the issues. It's just going to be a matter of actually applying it in game two.
JJ, anything from Marvin Williams? Because I know he was, I know a lot of folks were disappointed in his performance. So do you expect him to bounce back?
You know, I think so. Now, as far as defense goes, I think a lot of people looked at kind of the plus-minus, and they see Laurel Ding with 31, and then they see that, you know, Marvin was matched up against him. Well, again, going back to defensive rotations, and I wasn't able to watch the entire game in full down here, but I certainly know that it wasn't like Laurel Ding was just dropping 31 right in Marvin's face the entire time. That was a very bad team defense that gave, and Laurel Ding did take some of, but also gave Laurel Ding 31 points. Then on the offensive side, look, he went 1-for-7. I asked him about it. He said, I'll take 1-for-7. That's not going to bother me one bit. He said, these are the shots that I shoot. It wasn't like he was getting off terrible shots or anything like that, save for one, I think, where he thought he got fouled there in the paint. But 6 of those 7, I think he would take any other day. And, of course, the cliche, the shots just didn't fall. But, look, the sample size is so small. And after two games at this team, loses by 31 again, and Joe Johnson goes all for 30, and Marvin goes 1-for-7, and Frank decides that he can't shoot the ball out there, then I think Hornets fans should really be pressed to panic button.
The Hornets have had 2 days to mix some rest, some practice, and some tape study. Jonathan, how are they dealing with the extended time between that game one loss and game two?
Yeah, so plenty of tape. They put on the flash drive and they're watching it on laptops. We saw Clifford setting up the projector and the whiteboard when we were kicked out of practice earlier today. I know for a guy like Marvin Williams, still very close with Raymond Felton, his 2005 national championship teammate at UNC. So he watched very close with the Mavs game last night, was happy for Ray. These guys are also still very close with Portland, obviously with Gerald Henderson, with Brad Roberts, with Noah Vonleh. And so, if I'm not mistaken, Portland might play tonight. And so I think that's what they'll be up to tonight. And I could be wrong on that. But yeah, I mean, they're watching basketball at night. And during the day, they're watching basketball to watch themselves. And they're not, as far as I know, I haven't checked the police blotter lately, but not getting in trouble down here. So that's good.
Important follow-up question. You mentioned the flash drives. What are they rocking there? 8 gig? They use an SD cards? What are the?
Oh man, if I even knew what any of that stuff actually meant, I don't know. But they have some type of flash drive, some whatever they call them nowadays, right?
It's in the computer.
It's a series of tubes. Jonathan, points in the paint, something the Hornets have been able to contain for most of the season. Opponents average 40 per game. During the regular season, the Heat scored 56 in game one. How important to the Hornets is reducing that number, and do they have a plan to stop it?
Well, and so the interesting thing and the kind of misleading thing about that is that while the Hornets have been very good at points in the paint, and you mentioned 40 allowed, which I think was tied with the Spurs for maybe the third or fourth best in the NBA this past season, they haven't been as good against the Heat. And so, yeah, I mean, we can take what they've done against everybody, or we can take against what the team that they're playing against for potentially 7 games and what they did against them for 4 of the regular season.
Which one makes me feel better? I want that one.
I'm sorry. But their last regular season game against the Heat, I think Clifford said they get something like 56 against the Heat. And so this is really in line with what they did in the last game. And that turned out to be a win for the Hornets, of course. But you're not going to win if you give up that many points, if the differential's that much. Like the points in the paint are also, we got to take into account the second chance points, and they have to get on the defensive glass. I mean, that was pitiful that they only rebounded 61% of reboundable balls there, and that the Heat was able to get 14 offensive rebounds. That's not the Charlotte Hornets. They will get defensive rebounds, first in the NBA in percentage, around 74%, I think. Or maybe 76%. And so to get to 61, that's such a huge gap. And if they can't play their game there in the paint, then they're just not going to win this series.
Your colleague Scott Fowler at The Observer wrote that Kemba Walker still hasn't won a playoff game with the Charlotte Hornets, and he's not going to anytime soon unless he starts shimmying and shining. Did Kemba have any comments at practice today on his performance and whether anything needed to change on his end?
Yeah, he had an interesting note. The sideline reporter for TNT asked him, Kemba, do you think you need to shoot a little more? And I think his numbers were fine. I mean, what was he, 13. There you go. 6 for 13, so a decent average, 19 points, just under his season average. But look, we all know everything ratchets up in the playoffs, and we all know that this team is really feeds off of his energy. Of course, that first quarter, no one's really getting all energized after that first quarter if you're wearing teal and purple. So we all get that. But number one, the interesting thing that he said today was after he said, "Yeah, I don't think I need to shoot more. I liked my shots, and I was trying to be aggressive, but every time he got past the guy, there was another guy." And he was talking about the Heat defense, and I don't know if that means that he's going to need a few more ball screens. I don't know if there's going to need to be some better ball movement and spacing on the Hornets' offensive side. But I found that interesting where he just said, yeah, every time I tried to make a move and I thought I got past someone, there came another Heat defender.
He's Jonathan Jones, writer for the Charlotte Observer. He's down in Miami covering this, hopefully what will become a more heated playoff series as we continue on. Friends call him JJ, apparently, and he loves these V-neck T-shirts. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate the info.
Hey, appreciate it, fellas.
All right, catch you later, JJ.
See ya.
All right, so what if they don't win game two? Because Jonathan brought it up. He said, you know, he doesn't know if they can even pull out game two. He doesn't think that this series is over by any stretch of the imagination, but they right. could come back to Charlotte 0-2. What happens then?
Well, like I said this morning, I think the thing you worry about with that is this idea that they haven't won in, how long has it been? 10 games, 11 games? Franchise-wise, they haven't won a playoff game?
Yeah.
Just 11.
Right, 11. So they're creeping up on, I think, the NBA record.
You think that weighs on their mind? We discussed this a little bit.
It was a question. It's in every graphic now after that game. If they don't win now, you start to think about it or you start getting asked about it. I mean, that's the worry, I think. You just have to play better. If they're in this game, they're going to feel better about coming home. If it's another 30-point blowout coming back home, I mean, that's the worst-case scenario, right?
I don't think it's the worst-case scenario. One thing we got to factor in when we talk about these long, drawn-out series, especially when you're talking about an older team in the Heat, is that rest does play a factor. Rest is a big thing. And when you're going from 2 days to just 1 day in between games, like you're going to see between game three and game four, I think that's why you don't necessarily panic. Now, if they go up 3-0, series is over. Well, it's just going to be over in five, I think, because it'll be a gentleman's sweep.
But how much pressure is going to be on the Hornets to come back and win that home game, knowing, A, if they're down 2-0, that basically the series is over if they don't win that one? I mean, that's a lot of pressure,
but I trust this team to respond well, especially coming home, especially if you're going to have that kind of game where I fully expect them to show up. I expect the fans to show out full throat with their headbands.
That's gonna be
an awesome sight, and dare I say, maybe even old hive like for that kind of playoff game.
It's gonna be turned up in there. The biggest thing for me, I think, Doug, and you tell me how you feel about this. That game shook me as someone watching, just like it shook the Hornets in the first quarter, because every feeling I had going into that is now up for debate because you saw this 30-point blowout. And it's weird. There were four 30-point blowouts, right, in those first games. The Hornets were the only team that scored 90 points. Everybody else was 70 to 100. So it was out of nowhere. I mean, from all angles.
And by the way, no one should get any notions just because the Hornets scored 91. They scored, what, 74 after three? The game was paced at 85. I mean, that's an extremely slow pace. And, you know, that's because the Heat were taking all the shot clock they could and getting into their second and third pick and roll. So, you know, I don't think anyone should take anything away from that. But back to your question, David.
Well, other than the fact that they were able to do well enough offensively, right? I mean,
yeah. And I think that they have guys in Kemba Walker who he stepped up in pressure situations before. And then Al Jefferson Clifford commented several times during the season that Al Jefferson plays his best basketball when there's something on the line, when the pressure is on, when the situation, when the lights are shining brightest. So you just hope that that happens as well, and that he wakes up defensively and offensively as well. But I want to get back to some of the defensive woes that the Hornets had. Clifford mentioning the fact that the Heat do some strange things on offense, including putting those three guys on the baseline, and that leaves this gaping hole in the middle of the floor that the pick and roll up top can expose. Yeah. And they also, I was looking back at the tape today, they screen a ton in the paint, which is kind of an old school, like Karl Malone.
Yeah, I love their back screens. I love what they do, because that's how you get your post guys easy looks.
That's how you get Jeremy Lin trying to keep
Whiteside out of the paint.
Yeah, well, and they got D Wade mid-range looks like that as well. And credit to the Hornets, they didn't foul Dwayne Wade, but that's partly because they didn't get a hand on him.
I mean, you got to be near him.
Right, but and I think Clifford mentioned this as well at practice, that they have to do a better job of getting to the point of attack. And you saw in several of those situations where the pick and rolls happened up top and you had three guys at the baseline, everyone was backpedaling. Batum, Marvin, Cody, they were all backpedaling, and no one was attacking the ball handler. And so that has to be a point of emphasis as they move forward. And then, you know, offensively, I thought they did a good job getting to the free throw line, but eventually they're going to have to figure out a counter to what Miami did in terms of attacking their dribble handoff. They blitzed it, and they had Whiteside or Ding hang back.
And you made a good point the other day. They started the possession as a result of that a lot of times near the midcourt line. I mean, that's where they were receiving that ball and trying to go, and that's just not going to work. You're right. Driving to the basket was the one good thing offensively that they were able to do and kind of force their will on that end. But they're going to have to hit some shots too.
That's the big thing. They were – and I think the offense didn't look like Hornet basketball,
not
like what
all.
We expected.
11 assists.
11 assists, a lot of stagnant play, a lot of iso ball, and that's not Hornets basketball. That's not how you win.
Right.
The thing is, that speed that the Heat showed early shell-shocked them to the point where they just got stagnant. It got back to 2013, and unfortunately, that kind of ball, while it's efficient at times, it doesn't work because too many guys are stalled out and they're in their own heads, and by that time it's already over.
Yeah, and that's where we've seen the Hornets when they really struggle on offense. It's when the ball stops moving, somebody tries to go one-on-one, and you look at it like Jeremy Lin led the team with 3 assists, and I tweeted that out. That was not a positive tweet for Jeremy Lin. It was just stating,
be careful.
It was retweeted 27 times. It wasn't a shot at Jeremy Lin. It was just he had 3, Frank had 2, no one else had more than 1. So that's a problem. You got to have share in the ball and get people in good position. Outside shots, though,
they got to hit more outside shots. Yeah. And unfortunately, what I'm starting to worry about is on the other side, Josh Richardson is starting to get warm.
Well, here's the thing that no one's talking about in terms of outside shooting. Okay, Clifford decided to go to an 8-man rotation with Jefferson, Kaminsky, and Lin as the bench, but all up until the playoffs, they've had a 9-man rotation. And who's been the 9th guy? Troy Daniels, Jeremy Lamb, Spencer Hawes, guys that can shoot the 3-point. We basically took one of those guys out of the rotation, guys that would normally contribute 3 to 4 3-point opportunities per game. No one, and I'm really looking at Frank Kaminsky here, no one stepped up into that void. And we're able to solve the problems that Miami was giving them on the offensive end.
Yeah. I have a concern about whether Frank Kaminsky can play in this series because they seem to enjoy picking on him a lot. And while that plus minus thing can be like kind of misleading, there were a lot of plays.
There's been a lot of discussion apparently about plus minus.
Yeah,
there
were a lot of plays where they singled him out. Now I'm not sure. Now, granted, you're going to talk about paint defense if you put Al and Spencer out there, but at some point, either you're going to have to go Al Spencer or Frank's got to play better, and I'm not sure it's going to happen for him this year.
And that's why I think you may see Spencer Hawes a little earlier, right? I mean, because he didn't play much.
But I don't understand. I mean,
well,
you almost have to go to a 3-2 zone at that point because they are going so small at the beginning of the second quarter.
Yeah.
I don't. I don't know where Hawes can't guard Justice Winslow like that. That's who Frank was on in the beginning and mid.
Well, he can't guard him either.
Exactly.
But he's a little quicker. He's got a chance. Okay.
He doesn't. The thing with Frank Kaminsky on defense, and it bugs me, and I know me and you have talked about this on Twitter before, he doesn't know how to use his length yet. He's got long arms. He's got a long reach. And against a guy like Justice Winslow, who cannot shoot the jumper better than either me or you, you've got to give him all the room to shoot that. And with your length, if he shoots it over you and makes it, okay, you'll take that. But you got to play him for the drive. And unfortunately, Frank doesn't know how to use his length to play him for the drive yet, and that's what's so frustrating about it.
And he can't stand still when he's running at him full speed either.
Exactly.
It's not going to work out well. I'm just saying, even in the playoffs, just as general, you got to make him go to the free throw line and hit that, right?
Exactly. And that's
I would have gotten out of the way, so Frank stood in there. Like, when Winslow's coming at you, he's a horse.
You go old school. Old school Miami Heat, old school New York Knicks, no layups.
Yeah.
You don't get a layup. If you get a layup, then you've earned it. That way there's no chance for the three-point play. You put him on the free throw line. He makes his free throw lines. He makes his free throws. Okay.
Hey, you earned it.
Yeah, exactly.
But
you earned it.
At some point, I think we have to look at this game and say, they got hit in the mouth. They didn't know what to do. It was a total butt-kicking. And, like, sometimes you just don't need to break it down. I mean, sometimes that's just what happens. You know what I mean? It's hard to analyze it on some level.
I'm going to take a little time from the next segment because I have to ask both of you about this comment. And I wish I had pulled the audio. Rookie mistake. But from Steve Clifford at practice today, he basically said, you know, they went into this game with the same offensive plan that they have the 82 games in the regular season. But defensively, he said, you have to have a defensive game plan that in the playoffs, you have to have a defensive game plan that matches the strengths of the opponents. Okay, so we saw the Hornets do something differently defensively that we haven't seen them do a lot in the regular season. That's relentlessly trap and blitz the pick and roll. And that didn't work. And I don't know if that's Miami just either figuring it out quickly or playing better than they have all season, but that makes me wonder, okay, that didn't work. Do you double down on that, like Bill Belichick style? If the play doesn't work the first time, try it again. Or do you retreat and play the same style of defense that you played in the regular season?
I think that one thing that we have to realize is Eric Spoelstra is a very, very, very good coach. And one thing he knows how to do is dissect video. And he started as a video guy. He knows how to dissect video.
He did.
That's the one thing he knows how to do. So if you think he didn't prepare them in those 3 days before this series for that blitzing pick and roll style, then I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. Mind you, it's very, very cheap. I'm a very poor man right now.
It's real weird. I was listening to Bill Simmons and he said that Spoelstra was not big on experimentation. I'm like, what?
This guy's changed the offense three times in the last quarter of the season, right?
They swapped it up a lot.
But I don't know why Spoelstra has this national. I guess it's because he had LeBron early and then LeBron. I don't know why he has this national thing
that's
that
not
he's
still
not
out
a,
there, though. Is there?
Yes,
not,
it is.
No,
is
I
it?
Think I think the national media does not view Eric Spoelstra as a tactician, and no. I don't get it.
Exactly.
Somehow, maybe. Well, let me ask you this: is there a coach-player tandem you'd rather have going into the playoffs? How many other are there than Wade and Spoelstra? I mean, Pop Duncan,
Curry,
Kerr,
and maybe Stotts Lillard, maybe.
And not throw James Lou in there,
Scott
too.
Russell.
You guys didn't catch that?
What did you
say? I threw James.
I heard it.
I was trying to ignore it and move on.
I was totally focused on
Donovan Durant. No, not taking that one.
Not after last night, especially not after last night.
Carlisle and whomever. Carmelo Dirk?
No. The only reason I say no Carlisle Dirk is because, let's be real here, that Dallas team won 42 games on what's left of Dirk and little else.
Some Carlisle too, though.
I like Carlisle. Yeah. I just don't like the Dirk pairing in 2016. I just don't like
it. Yeah, well, point being that Wade and Spoelstra have been there. Yeah. They know how to do it. They're in sync.
There aren't many.
I mean, you just add the right pieces into that formula, and you're going to be tough to stop. So,
good points all. I'm going to move on to this next segment. Hornets backup point guard and full-time hair god Jeremy Lin is many things to many people, David and Nada. He's a scorer. He's an idol. He's an accidental inspiration for a tattoo. He's also an avid user of the website Reddit, a site where you can post and interact with other users on a wide range of topics. This is good.
It's fantastic.
Lynn took to Reddit to post some insider information, inside baseball, about his teammates. And here are the top five things we learned from Jeremy Lin's Reddit post. David, kick us off. Number five.
Number five. Tyler Hansbrough has the most hilarious and unexpected one-liners. He's also the one person on the team Jeremy Lin would never want to fight.
This just further solidifies my theory that Tyler Hansbrough's biological father is Nick Cage.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm processing.
Listen, Con Air. Think about Con Air. Think about Nick Cage and Con Air. Jesus. The best
one-liners.
Now
with the mustache. Raising Arizona.
There you go. And I would never want to fight Nick Cage.
Wait,
that's
isn't
crazy.
Well, neither isn't Hansbrough from Mississippi, though? So that makes a lot of sense.
Missouri.
Missouri, okay. Yeah, that really makes sense.
I believe
sense.
It's Missouri.
Mizzou, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, number four. Frank Kaminsky is the team's designated Chipotle runner, a.k.a. Team Poisoner, as well as Al's personal Jimmy John's courier. That's
Jimmy
nice.
Jimmy John's delivers.
The rookie brain.
Did they know that?
They were like, listen, I know you deliver very quickly, but we're going to send the rookie anyway.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's the rookie. He's got to go get us. It doesn't matter.
That's true.
Number three, David.
Sometimes Nick Batum arrives to practice on a Segway going Boris Diaw.
Oh, no.
This sounds like something out of one of those Blake Griffin Kia, like, In the Zone commercials. Like, hello, guys. No. Hello, fellow basketball players. I'm ready to hoop it up whenever you are.
Hello, fellow sports players.
Let me just hop off my vehicle of the future, the Segway.
This makes me scared to sign Nick Batum to a long-term deal
he
now.
He can
because
injure himself.
Not even that. I'm afraid of a lockout. And then he'll end up being really Boris Diaw Part 2, where he looks like Marlon Brando after that.
No. He's too skinny. Look, he's too skinny.
Hey, you say that. Remember, We have a whole bunch of nice lockout candidates that gained weight and lost their careers. Boris Diaw, surprisingly, is not one of them. He just went to San Antonio.
You know, we focused on Frank Kaminsky and North Carolina food a lot. And I don't, we've never really, no one's really talked to Nick Batum about how he enjoys Charlotte Food Fair. How does it compare to fine French cuisine?
Well, remember, he came from Portland, so this is probably an improvement.
Oh, yeah. Has he been to the French Quarter, the Latta Arcade?
There's not much French food in there.
Exactly. Like, literally, the extent of the French food around here is Amelie's. Think about that.
This is good pastries, though.
Yeah, very good pastries.
Delicious. Number two, Kemba Walker. This is the top five things we learned from Jeremy Lin's Reddit post. This is actually Jeremy Lin. We confirmed
it's
it.
Confirmed.
He's an avid Redditor.
We're good with
he's
yeah.
done the what do you call him? The
AMAs. Yeah.
So he's confirmed. All right, number two, Kemba Walker always wears a backpack as big as him. So he looks like, and this is Jeremy Lin quote, so he looks like a middle schooler on the first day of school.
I like that one.
That is a New York thing. I can confirm that.
Why is that?
Because
so New York started that. Yeah, to
where we basically because
I thought it was tiny backpacks. I thought
no,
that was the thing.
No. It's just the backpack thing, a big backpack. Because you got to remember, I've seen some videos where it's like him and Troy Daniels or him and Lamb. I remember specifically on the China trip where they took a PS4 with them. And,
oh yeah, put it up in the airport.
In the airport.
Yep.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he's doing where he does that. But I carry a backpack. Before I actually like got a really decent car, I took a backpack with me everywhere. So it's a New York thing.
All right. Well, how big is your backpack? Does the backpack have to be relative to your size?
Yes, it
does. You're kind of a big dude.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Is there a big and tall backpack store?
No, there isn't. Unfortunately,
sir, I would like your biggest backpack.
No,
the bigger the better.
Exactly. Otherwise, I'd be looking like I was on a camping trip, and we can't have that.
Number one,
Cody Zeller loves sandwiches like
sandwiches.
Me. So on the road, I always ask him where the best and nearest sandwich spots are.
I put this number
That's
one.
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
I put this number one not because Jeremy Lin revealed that Cody Zeller loves sandwiches. If you don't like sandwiches,
you're a communist.
Just,
let's be real.
But I put this number one because he apparently is a statewide sandwich expert.
Cody?
He knows where all the sandwich places are.
He's the go-to guy.
He's the go-to.
He's just in Yelp just the whole time.
Where are the hottest sandwich places in this city? Go to Zeller.
Hey, one observation I got from this is, the team nicknames. Mm-hmm. I just want to break them down real quick.
So, yeah.
They could use some.
Lynn basically revealed every single player's nicknames.
Yeah. It's Courtney Lee. C. Lee.
Now, right. C. Lee probably has been going through the league for God knows how long. You can't change it now.
Jeremy Lamb. J. Lamb.
I'm sensing a pattern.
Yeah.
Spencer Hawes. Spence.
But what's the other?
Or Needle.
I don't like Needle.
Needle actually works for Spencer Hawes, though.
Yeah.
Needle sounds like a schoolyard insult.
Was there another?
No. I forgot.
No one as big as Spencer Hawes should be called Needle.
And then one little note I thought was cool was that Marvin Williams gives his per diem to Aaron Harrison.
No joke. That's very cool.
That is very cool.
How can you not like Marvin, man?
Well, you can't because everything
one is how you cannot like him.
He gives his per diem.
Game one.
You think he gave his per diem back to him that day? I don't want this.
Aaron Harrison better not.
Aaron said, listen, you're going to need this.
By the way, Aaron Harrison's nickname? Twin.
That makes sense.
I mean, it's accurate.
Nicknames are hard. Do you have a nickname for me?
I got to hear this one. I'm so glad you invited me for this one.
We haven't gotten to that level. I don't know what level that is.
Oh, Jesus.
Y'all are horrible.
Doug?
That's my actual name.
I think if we asked Lynn, it would be either Doug.
D-Brand.
D-Branson. It'd be D-Branson.
D-Brand.
D-Brand.
D-Branson is like my username.
Oh, Jesus. So. No, we don't give out personal info on this. Come on now.
I'm sorry.
Hey, the last thing was he likes Jorge Gutierrez and he likes talking to him. He played ball at Cal, so we talk about how awesome California is.
Well, that's,
that's great.
Enjoy all that
high tax life.
That's it. More Reddit from Jeremy Lin.
Yes, we would love it. It was a huge post. Go and read it. I think I linked it on the show post. And visit the show post. If you're listening live, visit it right now and vote in our poll. It's coming up in just a second. We're actually going to take a look at that poll and we're going to talk with Nada Edwards here about the fan reactions to the game.
Measured?
Reaction. Hold on. I mean, it was a slogging. I mean, they got it put to them. And I think if fans, I have to tell you, producer Katie's reaction. She bought an MKG jersey shortly before he was re-injured.
Mm.
But she still wears it confidently to games and the like. But when they lost, really before they lost, I think a middle of the fourth quarter, she took that thing off and slung it across the room.
Katie, no one blames you. No one blames you. I looked at my mentions about midway through the fourth quarter. I wanted to do the same thing. I don't blame you at all, Katie. But yeah, as far as the fan overreaction goes, it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun at all, especially when we start bringing up old stuff, like we should have drafted Winslow.
All right, yeah. So I did want to jump into that. Tell me why the Hornets didn't or maybe shouldn't have drafted Winslow.
All right, the best way I can explain this is if you liked all the points you saw this year out of the Hornets.
Yes, I did.
You wouldn't have gotten it with Justice Winslow.
I like points.
You wouldn't have gotten it because you needed that outside threat. You needed a stretch for what Clifford was doing. If you like Justice Winslow, and also, this is the bigger point that I had on Sunday, he wasn't going to play for 2 years, especially if you signed Nick Batum. Because is he going to get playing time over Jeremy Lamb? No, because Jeremy Lamb can hit the three, initiate the offense. Was he going to play over Troy Daniels? No, because he was going to hit the three. If Aaron Harrison could hit a three right now, he would be playing. If he can consistently hit a three, he would be playing because he's that nice big guard that you can initiate the offense with, almost like a Jeremy Lamb. Justice Winslow does not check any of the boxes outside of defense, and unfortunately, you can't go with a one-way player, especially
another one,
especially after the Noah Vonleh experiment. and necessarily expect him to play immediately.
But Winslow has so much higher of an IQ than Vonleh has in terms of basketball.
And I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree
when
with
that. He came into the game, he affected it on like four straight possessions. The entire game on four straight possessions.
I do agree with you, but I would also point out that when we talk about the Miami Heat, there are few teams better at developing young guys than the Miami Heat, especially if you look at Hassan Whiteside, Josh Richardson, a lot of guys like that. Remember, they before that, they were helping revive Gerald Green's career before Josh Richardson took off. They are really good at developing guys and knowing where their strengths are and accentuating those and minimizing the weaknesses. Notice there aren't that many corner threes for a guy like Justice Winslow. That's on purpose. You have a lot of guys that are known to take guys under their wing. Look at D. Wade. He taught him that Euro step that he pulled on Frank.
Well, and we talk about the fact that we talked earlier about the fact that Spoelstra puts three guys, both post and perimeter, quote-unquote perimeter players, on the baseline. That is a good strategy. It's a good strategy for them because they can't spread out. You know, they can't stay high like the Hornets will put guys on the wings and spread them out. But you can't do that if you're Miami. So, and part of the reason is because they do have a couple of guys like Justice that can't be dependent on.
Yeah, you just go back and look what the Hornets were trying to do with that offseason, which they did. They added
height. They succeeded, yeah.
And they added three-point shooting across the board. You bring in Winslow.
It short-circuits everything.
When you think you already have MKG, of course, you can never play them together.
No, you couldn't. Right? You couldn't because you'd have exactly what you had last year with Lance.
Right.
You'd have the exact same thing. You'd have everybody playing basically from the free throw line and saying, okay, here you go, Kemba Walker. You're not going to have the paint. We're going to let you shoot. Here you go, MKG. We're going to let you shoot.
Yeah.
Here you go, Justice. We're going to let you shoot.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack us there, Doug, but that's why. And you can argue whether you say, well, screw it, we're still going to take him. But that's the reasoning.
The logic behind it was very sound.
Yeah.
The logic behind it was very sound, and it's understandable. And I'm not sure not playing Justice Winslow for 2 years doesn't ruin the kid.
Now let's break down the Godfather offer again, Doug.
That. I want to go to the poll that we put on the – and I've always said we have some of the smartest, most reasonable fans, and they came through in the clutch again. So I put a panic meter, and it's HiveCon for DefCon. HiveCon 3, which is the lowest, got 50%. The buzz will come back. HiveCon 2, holding off on my second-round travel plans, 32%. And HiveCon 1, which is panic, can Michael Jordan suit up, is only 18%. So our listener is reasonable, but you said not. You were paying attention to Twitter and on the air on the different shows, and guys are starting to panic.
People are starting to panic. They're blaming each other. They're thinking this is a Kemba fault thing. This is a Batum fault thing. They're blaming everything. This was an aberration. A 30-point blowout has rarely happened to this team this year.
Record-setting.
Exactly. Record-setting to the point of 1.4 points per possession, which is a record for this season. If you don't need anything, if you know nothing else, know that that was a record this season. That should show you how much of an aberration this was. I get panicking. I get it not looking bad. I get not liking the optics of it. But at the same time, this is a very good team that's going to rebound. And more importantly, they're not going to get swept. Can we stop worrying about getting swept? Because
I'm worried. That's just me.
David.
Well, it's 11 games. That's the thing. It's the history. You hope it's not weighing down on Kemba Walker.
But I'm with you.
Mind.
The bounce back. I've been on the bounce back train all year.
They're going to get game four. I'm willing to guarantee that. They're going to get game four if only because those old guys are not going to be ready to go game four. Now, games two and three are going to be the issue.
Because you got plenty of rest.
You got plenty of rest.
And plenty of time for Spoelstra
plenty
to scheme.
Plenty of Miami downtown.
Exactly.
Spoelstra.
But that's the benefit of finishing third.
Yeah.
All right, final question before we get to what's happening around the NBA playoffs with Nick Denning. Is Kemba Walker, and we heard from Jonathan Jones a little bit on this earlier in the show, is Kemba Walker in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation with fans? The Heat schemed against Kemba Walker to keep him out of the paint. Kemba said it at practice. Every time he drove, there were two guys trying to keep him out of the paint. They got him off the free throw line. They got him away from the catch and shoot three opportunities he's had all season, and he still managed 19.6 of 13 shooting. Yet I look around on these Twitter polls saying who should step up, and it's Kemba Walker, Kemba Walker, Kemba Walker. What's going on here?
Well, he's the leader, though. I mean, that's going to come with the territory to some degree.
I just think he's damned. Like, he's damned if you do 19.6 of 13 shooting. That's good.
That's a great night. That's a great efficient night when you're shooting around 50%, especially when it comes to from three as well. I don't know. It's not Kemba's fault because, unfortunately, for some fans, they don't realize that Spoelstra's main purpose of that defense right now, you're going to take away Kemba Walker first, you're going to take him away second, and you're going to take him away third. Then everybody else is the factor. You take away Kemba Walker, you take away the swagger of that team, they're going to be like they were game one. You have to take him out because otherwise they start feeling good. Then you got Marvin Williams start making shots and feeling good. You got Jeremy Lamb starting to feel good. You got Jeremy Lin feeling good. You have Frank Kaminsky feeling good. You take away that good feeling from their leader, you're gonna, and you take the head away from the snake, that's going
to
be it.
Do they need more Lin and Kemba together?
No. No.
It's to, well, that means Lin guarding Wade.
I know. That's a bad thing.
That's a bad thing. Here's why I say he's damned if you do, damned if he doesn't. Because had he shot 5 of 17 for 25.
Oh, they're killing him.
They would have destroyed him.
Yeah,
they
said in actuality, he's forcing it was a blowout. Like, no one, you can't hang this on any one person, I don't think.
No, you can't. You can't. This was a team failing. This was a team failing against a team that came out ready to establish dominance. You can't blame a single solitary person on this one.
But
and I think reporters were hinting when they interviewed Marvin Williams the first day about, you know, his failings against the Walding, and Marvin seemed a little annoyed.
He shouldn't be.
Well, but I think he sees this as a team failing as well. As this was a scheme that they had going in to, you know, basically double the ball handler on the pick and roll.
There's
and
a
then,
lot of people that left Ding open.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But personally, like, I get being prickly for being blamed for that because I wouldn't like to be blamed for that and called out in Front Street. But unfortunately, if we're going to assign blame accurately, Marvin's got to take a lot of it because that was a no-show. A lot of that was a no-show. You can't, again, what you say, 1 for 7 or 1 for 6 or whatever, and 6 of the 7 he would gladly take. At the same time, it was a no-show for a guy that's coming up for contract.
Yeah, the difference is Kemba's the guy, right? Kemba's the leader.
Kemba is the guy.
And I feel like he was a little slow to start, and by the time he really got going, it was too late. 17 point. The problem was, like Jonathan was saying, 15, 17, those are not insurmountable leads, but you couldn't get any stops. So you were scoring, but if you can't stop them more than two times in a row, it doesn't matter.
And they couldn't get a rebound, really. And they couldn't finish the defense. Because the thing is, like, if you look back at the tape, they got the Miami Heat to their second pick and roll. And when you do that, you have a greater chance of getting, you know, Hassan Whiteside in the middle of the floor stuck and not able to pass. But the problem was they got into their second pick and roll, got an okay shot up, and then got the offensive rebound.
Yeah.
And then it's all reactionary. Then there's bodies flying.
Then it's
everywhere.
Academic, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest issue I think I have with it. And that's the biggest issue I might have with Marv. That boxing and ceiling was mediocre at best. And I understand that it's Hassan Whiteside, but you also have another big down there helping you seal. So the bigs are going to have to do more than just seal like what they normally do. They're going to have to go and get the ball.
Everybody is. I mean, Batum.
Batum, yeah.
You know,
that's a team wide thing.
Not enough rebounds from him. So it's going to have to be a team effort.
All right, let's go to one of our favorite segments. It's what's happening around the NBA playoffs with Nick Denning.
Presenting important news.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Nick, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's happening around the NBA playoffs?
Well, we have our, I guess, second offseason coaching hire so far. I guess it's not the offseason just yet, but for some of these teams it is. The Phoenix Suns have hired Earl Watson to be their head coach in a 3-year deal. Watson was the interim coach this season after the Suns fired Jeff Hornacek. According to reports, the primary reason they brought him back was, I guess he was backed by many of the players during their exit interviews. So good on Earl. I mean, this is, you know, it's good that they listen to the team, and, you know, even though the record probably doesn't reflect it, it's certainly it seems like the right move, at least in the immediate.
It sounds like Suns management were ready to exit to their offseason. They were like, we don't want to interview anyone else.
He's already
else.
Here. All He's right. got the keys.
Yeah, and more importantly, if you saw anything of that team this year, and I saw them up close and personal, they didn't look like they wanted to be there with Earl Watson. This is going to be another mistake of a coaching hire.
Earl, we have one question for you in your exit interview. Are you actually Jeff Hornacek in disguise? No. Okay, you're hired. All right, Nick, what else is happening?
Jamal Crawford was named Sixth Man of the Year. He averaged 14 points a game this season, shooting 40% from the field, which really isn't that good. But the important thing about this, I guess the significant part about this, is this is his third time winning it, and he's the first player to ever do that. And just for a note, I don't know if you guys talked about it earlier, but our man Jeremy Lin finished seventh in voting. He received one first place vote. Do we know who voted for him? Is that released?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was Rick. I really wouldn't be surprised if it was Rick.
But last year, Rick didn't vote for MKG. So I would be a little surprised. Anyway. No, that's interesting. I go ahead and get your third point, but I really want to talk about this Jamal Crawford thing here in a second. But what's your third item?
Okay, well, the third item of business, the Thunder, obviously we know, won by 38 points against the Mavericks in Game 1. Last night, however, the Mavericks bounced back and won Game 2. You know, Steven Adams just a second, fraction of a second too short on getting that tipping in. But, you know, after Game 1, me wrote off the Mavericks completely. But with their ability to win Game 2, I guess this kind of flows into my question. So maybe, you know, we'll get back to the Lin thing. But my question to you guys is, we have a blowout victory by the home team in Game 1. Do you think that this can mislead fans and the media and even players into thinking that the series is over?
It depends on the youth.
Unless you're San Antonio and Memphis.
Well, look, the Hornets series, yes. This other series, no. That series is like Oklahoma City Maverick. It's over. Oklahoma City's delaying the inevitable, but it's over.
But I think a lot of people saw that going maybe six.
Wait,
standards.
They're so hurt.
Mavs OKC? I didn't see that going six. I saw that going five.
Some people.
Tops.
I said some people.
Well, where are these people? And can we have
them
check?
I'm saying a list of some other podcasts. Can we have some people thought that?
I'm just saying, where are these people, David? I want to get them checked.
Nick, what do you think about Jamal Crawford winning the Sixth Man of the Year? I don't like it. I think he inefficiently scored all season. He didn't really do anything else.
I love Jamal Crawford.
Thank you, David.
Well,
Nick, don't leave me out on an island here. This is ridiculous. I mean, there were better candidates. Will Barton was a much better candidate.
I agree with you there.
Right, but I think the difference here we're going with, and I agree with you to an extent, but there's a couple of things I think going into play here. When Blake Griffin was out, Crawford's numbers jumped. He averaged 16 points a game. He shot the ball a little bit better, so he stepped up kind of in that absence, not, you know, significantly, but there was an increase. The problem, I think, when you got somebody like Barton is, you know, is Denver actually, like, they weren't ever really competing for anything. So I really think you could get, I mean, if we're gonna say that Crawford shouldn't have won it, we got to give it to a guy that actually, not only was he coming off the bench as a sixth man, but he's contributing to a team that's going for the playoffs.
So would you throw Iguodala in the mix? Because I thought Iguodala should have won it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
He finished second, so. Yeah.
But the thing with Barton is, you know, they weren't a contender, but imagine Denver without Will Barton. I mean, they would have been
they'd have been number one in the lottery.
They'd have been a complete and utter joke. They weren't a complete and utter joke.
Horrible.
They were, you know, a snicker.
No, they were a chortle. They were not a snicker.
They were a solid snicker.
No, they were a chortle. Chortle.
Chortle. No, I know. I just don't like, and these awards, let me just say this, they mean nothing. And I feel like...
Don't tell Jamal Crawford that. Well, this is his award now.
He's got three Kias. Yeah, don't tell him that. But I just think that these awards could be better served elevating younger players that are up and coming, introducing them to a national audience instead of whatever this was, service to a guy to give him three awards. I'm just saying, to me, this just moves the Sixth Man of the Year and other awards that aren't all NBA into further obscurity amongst the fans at large. That's my only thing. Jamal Crawford did nothing
but
score the basketball.
Crawford's the third leading scorer on a Clippers team that some people see as on a good day could challenge for the Western Conference.
He almost shot
right?
under 40%.
I know. I get it. His percentages were down. I mean, so some of this may be going on past history too, but he's still scoring. And let's be honest, six man, you're not going to win a six man if you're not scoring, right?
Unfortunately, no. And I think that's why you need to change the perception and change the parameters of how the six man is looked at. Because if you're talking about six man being the most valuable guy off your bench, then it's got to be Andre Iguodala. But if you're not going to change the criteria of it to guy that scores the most, or basically guy that chucks the most, and the only reason you're not starting is because you can't play dead in a Western when it comes to defense, then yeah, Jamal Crawford does deserve it. But at the same time, to me, Andre Iguodala was the guy.
Yeah, at the same time, I'm never going to be mad at Jamal Crawford for getting an award. He's 36 years old. He makes every game he plays in more fun and more interesting to watch.
This is true.
And he's never afraid. He's still not afraid to chuck it, obviously.
Of course he's got no conscience. He's on, again, he's, think about this. He was Lance before he got his head right.
Oh, yeah.
Can we go, real quickly, can we swing back to this Mavericks-OKC game?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I'll go get sources if you want sources. I'm just saying. I've heard people say it.
I need these sources. I need these sources. Don't be Broussard. Don't be Broussard on me.
Sauces. Raymond Felton, this is why I'm going to tie this in. Former Bobcat, 21 points, a ton of threes. Still shoots really oddly.
When we're talking about a ton of threes, we're not talking about a ton of number threes, are we?
No, I'm saying he weighs a ton and he hit threes.
Okay. I'm just trying to make sure that it's a ton of three, not like the number three meal at McDonald's or something like that.
No, we're kidding. He had a great game and he looks good. Did. He looks a little schvelter. I said good, not great. Nick, what were your thoughts on this game? I mean, the Mavericks threw their A game, right? And they only won by one.
Well, no Deron Williams. I mean, coming off a 30-point blowout, it would have been easy to pack it up. Nick, I'll just speak for you.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So, I mean, it helps Dallas that, you know, Durant and Westbrook, what, shot like 5 of 37 combined? Is that the correct number? Is that something wrong? They shot the ball terribly. I mean, what stands out to me about Felton, I mean, okay, he 21 points, you know, but 11 rebounds. I mean, I didn't know the guy could get up like that anymore. I mean, I guess just putting himself in good position. David, you made a good point. I mean, the fact that they threw their best shot at him and won by one, and only one because Steven Adams was slow on his tip-in. I mean, that's kind of, you know, I don't expect Raymond Felton to repeat this kind of performance in the next game, even if it's at home.
No, and I will say he missed those two free throws at the end of the game too. They kept it at a 1-point margin. That would have been a tough one to take had it cost him the game after how well he played.
Would have been like the Detroit Cavs game one, where Detroit shot better from the 3-point line than they had all season and then ended up losing. Nick, thanks as always, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, one last thing. We'll go back out to Twitter and this poll real quick. The standing's still the same, 50% of you. HiveCon 3, the buzz will come back. I like it.
And thank you for being smart. Thank
you. I'm telling
you,
I
appreciate
it. The smartest Twitter followers and show listeners.
Time helps. Those first 24 hours were rough.
And
brutal.
One of our Twitter followers, really smart. He says, use Twitter polls next time. Easier to use. I got to get those clicks, man, at thehive.com. They're our home. That's our home.
Oh, Jesus.
Go to your home.
Go to your home. All right, that'll do it for us, Hornets fans. Thanks so much to our guest, Jonathan Jones, covering this Hornets Heat series out in Miami for the Charlotte Observer. And, of course, to our friend.
Dude.
Nana Edwards. Always, you're
coming
just always bringing the heat.
Look, I have to. If I don't, then who will?
Well, how can folks listen to you on the Mic Check Podcast?
All right, you got to go to Podomatic, look up Mic Check Podcast. I put the links out every week. I was supposed to be recording with my first official guest, one Doug Branson, but unfortunately, the FNZ studios weren't really available. Outside of that, though, again, Tuesday, Friday, coming out with a podcast every week, we will recap probably game two on Friday, and I think we're going to go get a mutual friend of all of ours, Dustin Pfeiffer.
Nice. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Hive Talk Live for live game updates and more. Go to atthehive.com for all the latest news and analysis. For David, Nick, and producer Katie, I'm Doug, saying stay bought in. Forget about game one. Stay believing. All hail the teal and purple.